And now it's time for the Earth First update. All the environmental news you can use. Uncle Dennis here at Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.3 and www.freakradio.org. On Thursday, July 26th, I'd like to remind you to have a pencil and paper handy so that you can record names, dates, telephone numbers, web pages, addresses, all that information you need in order to take action. Let's start with announcements. The California Native Plant Society, Santa Cruz County Chapter Habitat Restoration Team, is having a restoration this Saturday, July 30th, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Seabright Beach, which is part of Twin Lakes Beach State Park. What a wonderful way to spend a summer morning doing coastal restoration on this sweet California State Beach in Santa Cruz, on the east side of the San Lorenzo River where it empties into the Pacific Ocean. We will be removing ice plant along the dunes just past the volleyball courts below 4th Avenue and heading towards the Yacht Harbor. Come join us and see how this place has been transformed into a coastal paradise with the help of dedicated neighborhood stewards. Directions to Seabright Beach. The meeting spot is the entrance to Seabright Beach, part of Twin Lakes Beach on the west side of the Yacht Harbor at the intersection of Highway 17 ending in Santa Cruz and Ocean Street. Take Ocean Street straight down until it ends. Take a left at the intersection. You have the river on your right and the beach boardwalk. Beyond that, climb the hill and shortly after passing the train trestle, make a quick right-hand turn. Follow this down towards the ocean. It will curve to the left and start going down a hill just right across from the Santa Cruz City Museum of Natural History, where there is a large gray whale sculpture. At the bottom of the hill is the entrance to Seabright Beach at the corner of Mott Avenue and East Cliff Drive, where we will meet up at 10 a.m. Seabright Beach has no parking lot, but you can park anywhere in the neighborhood streets where there is not a no parking sign or red curb. There is no neighborhood permit parking in this area. And the Susquehanna Regional Climb Camp will be happening in August from the 12th to the 18th in Pennsylvania. And this news story from the Hudson Valley Earth First. The fossil fuel infrastructure build-out and its accompanying tree cutting has made us realize the need for more skilled climbers to combat the destruction of our regions and Earth. Join regional organizers in training for a week-long climb camp and practice skills in basic and advanced tree climbing, platform rigging for tree sits, aerial blockades, and more. Take the fight against fossil fuel infrastructure to new heights. Get climb training. For more information or to RSVP, please email susquehannacc at riseup.net. I'll spell that. SUSQUEHANNACC@riseup.net. SusquehannaCC at riseup.net. When you do RSVP, please indicate your level of previous training and what you hope to get out of the camp. Let us know about any special dietary or other needs so that we can do our best to accommodate you. And please come prepared for a week of camping. Members of the Mapuche ancestral tribe have burned dam excavators in Argentina in this story from Counter Vortex at the Earth First Newswire. Members of the Mapuche ancestral resistance in the pre-dawn hours of July 19th burned two excavator machines belonging to British business magnate Joe Lewis that were used to build a hydroelectric dam at El Bolsón in Argentina's Río Negro province. The dam is planned for the headwaters of the Rio Escondido on Lewis's private property and is being built with cooperation from Ednor Electric Company, of which Lewis is the largest stockholder. The militants left behind leaflets headlined Lewis out of Patagonia and listing their demands for the release of political prisoners and the eviction of coal, oil, and mining and hydroelectric companies from Mapuche traditional territories. Liberty was especially demanded for Facundo Jones Huala, who was arrested in May and is currently being held pending an extradition request by Chile, where he is wanted for land usurpation. Mapuche territory is bisected by the Chile-Argentine border. And in a letter, for the last 2 years, Oregon's most famous wolves, OR7 and his rogue pack, have made the Crater Lake region in the South Cascades their home. In doing so, they become Western Oregon's first and only wolf pack since the 1940s. The residence there draws a direct connection between Oregon Wild's highest profile wildlife campaign and our flagship wilderness campaign for Crater Lake and its surrounding wildlands. For the second year in a row, Oregon Wild is hosting the Crater Lake Wolf Rendezvous. Join us from September 15th to the 18th for the Crater Lake Wolf Rendezvous, sponsored by Mountain Rose Herbs. The trip is scheduled for Thursday, September 15th through Sunday, September 18th. The 4-day, 3-night trip will take you to the incomparable landscapes around Oregon's only national park. We'll visit portions of Oregon Wild's 500,000-acre Crater Lake Wilderness proposal, including the headwaters of one of Oregon's most iconic rivers, the Wild Rogue. The tentative schedule includes meeting with wolf biologists, naturalists, and local wildlife advocates, possibly tracking or outdoor skills workshops, scenic drives, and short hikes throughout the area. With barely 100 confirmed wolves in the entire state of Oregon, it's quite unlikely that we'll see any of them. Even so, their home is arguably one of the most beautiful places on the planet, and they share it with a cast of charismatic characters, including the Pacific Fisher and several species of raptor. Advocating for big wildlife and wildlands from afar is often necessary. However, there is a special perspective one can gain from seeing wolf tracks, hearing a pack howl, or simply knowing you're sharing the landscape with one of the state's most endangered and charismatic species. While it's not guaranteed, this is your best chance of seeing wolves and their tracks in the wildlands of Crater Lake. We hope you'll join us in experiencing the wildlife and wildlands we all care so much about protecting. If you are interested in the trip, please go to the Oregon Wild website for more information. That is www.oregonwild.org. And once again, the dates are September 15th through the 18th for the Crater Lake Wolf Rendezvous. And here is the Buffalo Field Campaign's update from the field for this week. Summer is a great time to be a buffalo in Yellowstone Country. The grass is tall, lush, and plentiful. The herds are all gathered in the Lamar and Hayden Valleys in enormous family reunions, living the good life. The buffalo rut, or mating season, is in full swing. The bellows of huge bulls can be heard throughout the valley like the roars of dragons. They kick up great clouds of dust as they attempt to show the females and would-be challenger bulls that they are worthy to be chosen as a mate. Once a bull is accepted by a cow as her partner, he will stay by her side for the duration of the rut, defending against any other bull who dares to come close. Bull buffalo are fierce competitors, challenging one another by locking horns, sparring, and heaving their massive weight back and forth. Such sparring matches are relatively rare, as bulls will urinate in a wallow and then roll in it, and another bull can detect the fat muscle content to determine whether it's a good idea to engage in battle with that buffalo. While such sparring does sometimes result in injuries, fatalities are rare. The victor earns a chance to ask for a female's acceptance to be his mate. It is in this way that the strongest genes are passed on from generation to generation. It is also a time when little red calves, who we spend so much time with in the spring, start to change color from their baby red to the more familiar dark chocolate brown of juvenile and adult buffalo. There is a strong energy of celebration among the buffalo at this time. It is a powerful time to be in their presence and a very good time to give them a lot of space. A few of us have had opportunities to go visit with our buffalo relatives in the past few weeks, and it is such a pleasure to see them at peace doing things on their own terms. Knowing the buffalo the way we do, we understand their body language and energy, which is so different at this time of year. If you have the opportunity to visit Yellowstone during the rut, enjoy their presence from a safe distance, especially from the bulls. These big boys have one thing and one thing only on their minds. Anyone who gets in the way of that is considered a challenge. If you do make it to Yellowstone this summer, please visit the Buffalo Field Campaign. We have constant presence inside Yellowstone with our summer outreach table, where we talk with visitors about what happens to the buffalo during the winter and spring months, when they migrate to lower elevations towards and into Montana. Hundreds, if not thousands, of visitors are learning about what is taking place and how the livestock industry and the government who serves them are harming our national mammal. So many people are visiting Yellowstone this time of year. The number of people who will learn about the buffalo is increasing, as are our chances of making positive and lasting change for these gentle giants. And if you want to contact the Buffalo Field Campaign, the best thing to do is go to their webpage, www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. That's www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. If you want to send them a donation, please send it to Buffalo Field Campaign, P.O. Box 957 West Yellowstone, Montana, 59758. Once again, Buffalo Field Campaign, P.O. Box 957 West Yellowstone, Montana, 59758. If you have any questions, give them a call at 406-646-0070, repeating, 406-646-0070. And this and all their information, which is really extensive, can be found at their webpage, www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. And a lawsuit has been launched to protect rare California fish and an endangered mammal in this story from the Center for Biological Diversity. The Center for Biological Diversity and Endangered Habitats League have announced their intent to sue the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers for its failure to assess harm to federally protected Santa Ana suckerfish and San Bernardino kangaroo rats. In violation of the Endangered Species Act, the Corps has never consulted with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service regarding the effects of management of the Santa Ana River flood control projects, including operation of the Seven Oaks Dam on the Santa Ana suckerfish and its federally designated critical habitat. It also has not considered new information, including changes in dam operations. These iconic Southern California animals are on a downward slide toward extinction, said Eileen Anderson, a senior scientist at the Center for Biological Diversity. The Army Corps needs to follow the law and do its duty to the American people by consulting with the Fish and Wildlife Service to identify and remedy any harm resulting from the mismanagement of the Santa Ana River. Managing the Santa Ana River to enhance wildlife that depends on it also helps to ensure water quality and quantity for the people who depend on the river. Keeping the system as natural as possible allows for water infiltration and purification. We can successfully comply in flood control with preserving wildlife values and the citizens' natural heritage, said Dan Silver, Executive Director of Endangered Habitats League. The Army Corps and the Fish and Wildlife Service originally consulted on impacts to the endangered Santa Ana River woolly star plant and the San Bernardino kangaroo rat in 2002, but new critical habitat was designated for the Santa Ana suckerfish in 2010, and the Corps has never considered the impacts of the overall operation of the Santa Ana River project on the species. In addition, the operation and management of the Santa Ana River project and its Seven Oaks Dam have changed in the intervening 14 years, and more changes are proposed. The Corps has also failed to meet its original commitment to provide controlled flood releases to benefit downstream habitat for the San Bernardino kangaroo rat. All of these changed circumstances must be reevaluated by the agencies. The Santa Ana sucker is a small olive gray fish found in clear, cool, rocky pools of creeks as well as gravelly bottoms of permanent streams with slight to swift currents. Many of these streams are naturally subject to severe seasonal flooding, which can decimate resident fish populations. The Santa Ana sucker's adaptations enable it to repopulate its birth streams rapidly after such unpredictable events. The fish eats primarily algae, which it searches out with the large lips that give it its common name. The species was well distributed throughout the LA, San Gabriel, and San Bernardino rivers historically, where it has vanished from nearly 95% of its historic range since the 1970s and is now relegated to only a few stream reaches. The San Bernardino kangaroo rat is a small seed-eating animal with large hind legs that it uses to hop around on like a kangaroo, which is how it got its name. It lives along the banks of creeks and streams where it helps to reestablish plants and habitat after floods by collecting and distributing seeds of local shrubs and flowers and trimming vegetation. It is found only in Riverside and San Bernardino counties, although it was much more widespread just 50 years ago. Much of its habitat has been developed, so it has been relegated to the flood channels and adjacent banks of unchannelized streams. And you can find out more information at www.biologicaldiversity.org. And starving bald eagles hint at ecosystem collapse in this story by Connor Guerin of The New Scientist, as found on the Earth First Newswire. Short rations for America's iconic raptors, a team of Florida Atlantic University installed cameras at four bald eagle nests in Florida Bay between the southern mainland and the Florida Keys to figure out why the population of eagles has been declining. They found that eagle parents were feeding their young less than twice a day, nearly half of what eagle chicks get to eat in other regions. The team also observed that the biomass of the food deliveries declined throughout the breeding season, even as the chicks grew larger, suggesting that the parents weren't finding enough food. Eagles in southern Florida have symbolic value. Florida has always historically been a stronghold for the species, said Brian Watts at the College of William and Mary in Williamsburg, Virginia. It's the southernmost extent of the species range. While bald eagle numbers crashed throughout the continent in the 1970s as eggshells were thinned by DDT, the Florida Bay population, largely free of pesticides, held steady, he said. The study concluded that a collapsing Florida Bay ecosystem isn't supporting the eagles anymore. In recent decades, high salt concentrations have killed off seagrasses, releasing sediments that triggered algal blooms. The knock-on effect has killed many fish that eagles depend on for food. It's possible developments in the Everglades have disrupted the flow of fresh water into the bay, setting off these problems. Ospreys, another raptor species that relies even more on fish, have also dwindled in Florida Bay, said Watts. The same fingers are pointing to food stress relative to an ecosystem-wide change, he said. One of the benefits of monitoring ospreys and eagles is that they're an indicator of what's happening underneath the surface. However, bald eagles aren't in trouble in most of the U.S., said Watts. After recovering from the 1970s DDT decline, the species has thrived. Their numbers are huge across the continent now, he said. And the United States will open more wildlife refuges to hunters in this story by Taylor Hill from Take Part, as found on the Earth First Newswire. The United States Fish and Wildlife Service plans to expand hunting and fishing opportunities in 13 national wildlife refuges across 9 states, including opening up big game hunting in Colorado's 92,000-acre Baca National Wildlife Refuge for the first time. While that's good news for America's hunters, who will have more chances to target big game species such as elk and deer, as well as prairie chickens, quail, pheasant, ducks, doves, and pigeons. But conservationists fear the move will expose wildlife to lead poisoning and other threats. The best purpose for our national wildlife refuges is the original purpose, to provide an inviolate sanctuary for the protection of our native wild spaces and wildlife, said Jennifer Place, a program associate at Born Free USA in Washington, D.C. In the 562 national wildlife refuges, 336 permit some sort of hunting and 275 allow fishing. These refuges encompass more than 150 million acres of land that hundreds of species of mammals, birds, reptiles, amphibians, and fish, and 240 endangered species call home. According to the Fish and Wildlife Service, wildlife refuges are intended for multiple human uses, including wildlife photography, birding, hunting, and fishing. More than 90 million people pursue some sort of wildlife-related recreation, and these refuges conserve space for people and animals to share. But lately, the agency has been opening up more options for hunters and anglers. It has proposed to expand hunting options and wildlife refuges every year for the past 4 years. States where hunting opportunities could expand include Indiana, Louisiana, Michigan, New York, Oklahoma, South Carolina, and Texas. There has been strong pressure at the national level for the Fish and Wildlife Service to expand hunting and fishing on federal land, including within the National Wildlife Refuge System, Place said. That increases the potential for negative environmental impacts on all wildlife, not just those targeted by hunters. That's due to the continued use of lead ammunition and lead fishing gear, which exposes animals to health risks. According to the Humane Society of the United States, data shows that more than 130 species have been exposed to or killed by ingesting lead shot, bullet fragments, or prey contaminated with spent lead ammunition. California's condors are one of the most famous victims of lead poisoning. The opening of additional national wildlife refuges to hunting likely means that more lead ammunition is entering our refuges, posing significant health risks to wildlife as well as humans, and can have serious implications for the environment, said Nicole Paquette, Vice President of Wildlife Protection at the Humane Society of the United States. The government has banned the use of lead ammunition to hunt waterfowl, but it is still allowed for the hunting of other species. In 2014, conservation groups petitioned the Department of Interior to ban all use of lead ammunition in national wildlife refuges. So far, only California's Department of Fish and Wildlife has moved to ban lead ammunition, which is currently being phased out, but will be phased out completely by 2019. And record numbers of dolphin deaths have occurred along Bulgaria's Black Sea coast in this story by Angel Karasimarov, World Environment News, Thomson Reuters. Carcasses of dolphins are washing up on Bulgaria's Black Sea beaches at higher than normal rate, with a record of 108 dead animals discovered this year, local authorities said. The cause of the deaths has yet to be determined, said Environment Minister Evelina Vasileva, after collecting information by regional centers, adding that 77 of the dead dolphins were found in the southern part of the country's Black Sea coast. Prime Minister of Bulgaria, Boyko Borisov, on Thursday called for a special meeting with conservation organizations to try and find a solution to the record number of deaths, and said on his official Facebook page that steps are being taken to ban fishing in areas populated by the protected species. The number of dead dolphins in 2016 is significantly higher than the 56 found last year and the previous record of 74 in 2012. Media reports of dead dolphins on Bulgarian beaches have been rife in recent years. In spite of repeated allegations, often with finger pointing at fishermen, the cause has yet to be established conclusively. There are three species of dolphins in the Black Sea off Bulgaria: the short-beaked common dolphin, the harbor porpoise, and the common bottlenose dolphin. The dolphin population along Bulgaria's Black Sea coast is about 15,000, according to the Environment Ministry. The penalty for killing a dolphin is a fine of up to 20,000 levs, about $11,270, and imprisonment for up to 5 years. And the feds are hanging lesser prairie chickens out to dry. Lesser prairie chickens, the extraordinary dancing birds of the West, lost big this week when the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, after pressure from states and industry, finally stripped their Endangered Species Act protection, as the agency said it would do back in May. Adding insult to injury, the service put forth no new plan to save the birds from extinction. Lesser prairie chickens have lost more than 90% of their habitat in recent years and 13% of their population in the last year alone. Last year's legal ruling required the agency to vacate its 2014 decision to protect the rare grouse as threatened, but in no way prohibited the feds from proposing much-needed new protections. The service's own scientists have warned that losing even a small amount of suitable habitat could send these magical birds into a death spiral, said Tanya Sanarib, senior attorney with the Center for Biological Diversity. Yet even with populations declining and habitat dwindling to dangerous levels, the agency is giving up and failing to propose new protections critical for this unique bird's survival. And California has officially listed atrazine as a reproductive toxin. Scientists have long warned about the effects of atrazine, the second most widely used pesticide in the United States and one of the most dangerous ever for humans and the environment. And now California has formally acknowledged the dangers of the chemical, which is strongly linked to birth defects, reduced fertility in men, and reproductive toxicities in women. Products containing it will now require a warning label before they can be sold in the state. The center has advocated for years against atrazine's use because of the grotesque impacts on wildlife, especially amphibians, such as the endangered California red-legged frog, whose permeable skins absorb the contaminants from agricultural runoff. Numerous studies have shown that atrazine chemically castrates and feminizes male frogs. This is an important action that California has taken, ensuring its residents know about the serious risks associated with a very common pesticide, said the center's Jonathan Evans. And for more information, go to www.biologicaldiversity.org. And prominent scientists urge end to public lands coal leasing. More than 65 prominent scientists have urged the Obama administration to fight global warming by ending coal leasing on public lands. In a letter to Interior Secretary Sally Jewell, Drs. Hansen, Ken Calderier, Mark Jacobson, Michael Oppenheimer, Susan Solomon, Stuart Pym, and dozens of other climate and environmental scientists pointed out that most U.S. coal deposits must stay in the ground to avert climate change's most damaging effect. The letter comes as the U.S. Department of Interior embarks on an environmental review of the federal coal leasing program, which alone accounts for 13% of all U.S. fossil fuel carbon emissions. Top climate scientists are speaking out about the need to end public coal leasing once and for all, and President Obama would be wise to heed their warning, said Shay Wolf, climate science director at the Center for Biological Diversity. It makes no sense for the federal government to undermine the climate fight by letting companies dig up more of this incredibly polluting fossil fuel from our public lands. And a study, Confronting Climate Change is Coral's Only Chance. People have long known that rainforests of the sea, our planet's beautiful biodiverse coral reefs, are increasingly endangered due to a variety of threats from pollution to habitat destruction to overfishing. But a groundbreaking new analysis, co-authored by the Center for Biological Diversity scientists, have now shown that climate change far surpasses any localized factors. That is, hedging risks to a particular reef system won't save it unless the larger problem is also solved. This study largely settles a debate within the scientific community about the relative importance of local versus global causes of declining coral reefs. The global CO2 problem has caused both coral bleaching, when heat-stressed corals expel colorful algae they need to survive, and ocean acidification, which depletes the seawater of compounds that corals need to build their skeletons. To save coral reefs, said the center's Abel Valdivia, one of the paper's authors, we must reduce our over-reliance on fossil fuels and lead global efforts to swiftly and drastically cut carbon emissions. And you can get more information at www.biologicaldiversity.org. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is produced every Thursday evening at 9 o'clock here at Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM and www.freakradio.org. We'd like to let you know that Grateful Dread Public Radio has a new URL. GDREADradio.net, that is GDREADradio.net, where you can hear the Earth First Update Sundays at 2 a.m. A new station broadcasting the Earth First Update is KOWA at 106.5 FM in Olympia, Washington, where you can hear the update on Saturdays at 7 a.m. And a brand new station in Florida, WLSL, low power, 92.7 FM in Dade City, Florida, is broadcasting the Earth First Update Sundays at noon. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio and is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. I want to thank you for listening and do tune in next week for another edition of the Earth First Update.